that has big time camp. What the movie will be the ultimate champ. You might be finger crazy, my finger diseased, but do you watch another chance to find the best of this?
We rate each movie in 5 categories, none of which are objective quality.
It's Stan, Gene, Jack and Nick who watch it till it's finished, because the love for this movie can be diminished. And make the film's plot has no rhyme or reason, but that's a part of charm.
Colin Brad is off the season.
It's low budget film that is most true. They find a flick that monster boogaloo.
Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo. Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo. Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo. Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Boogaloo! Welcome back to Season 5, Astronuts of the Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo. I am so happy to be here. I am your host, 8th Dan Stanadu, and I am pleased to be joined by my good friends. Right off the top, I got Nick Boxer.
Greetings and salutations. You mixed it up there.
I knew I could throw you off. And finally, we got bringing back the Mac, Jack Hall.
No, it's Mac Daddy Jack. Mac, the Daddy Mac Jack Hall. That's what it is.
Wow,
the big you're Jack certainly attack. Jacking something.
It's a big Jack attack.
The big Jack attack.
And finally, he just got Jack attacked. It is James Cotta.
I am happy to be here, and I want to say hello to all of my crewmates from the Southern Sun.
you know, were you space born?
Well, if he watched this movie, he might have been space bored.
Well, then he couldn't have watched this movie then, because you could not be space bored watching this movie.
Oh, really?
The Space Mutiny. Oh, my Lord. This is a classic of the genre. The 80s are attacking us from all sides.
Can you be specific what genre it's a classic of? Reb Brown. It's just a classic. Yes. Reb Brown.
It's a classic genre from Reb Brown. And yes, Reb Brown for me is a genre because I am a huge fan of Reb Brown. The one true Captain America right there.
That's right. You always remember your first Captain America.
Yeah.
It's like your first James Bond. It's the same. Exactly the same.
Oh, the exact same, yeah.
All right. Space Mutiny. Nick Boxer, tell the folks about it.
This is going to be a long season. yeah. Well, I think the title says a lot. There's space and a mutiny. There's a mutiny in space. The end. This whole thing takes place on board a spaceship called the Southern Sun. It's a generational spacecraft. So some of these people have never seen a planet, never touched down. And there's a mutiny on board led by John Loth. Oh, God, what's his name? John Philip Law. He controls the enforcers, that seem to be the cops. It's really not. And he starts sabotaging the ship, so they have to go near a planet where he has a plan to land the thing and become rich. And there's some pirates, but that's not all that clear.
Certainly not important.
If he's struggling, folks, it's only because he watched the movie.
Yeah, you might have a little bit less problem.
I enjoyed the space leotards. The end. That's what I got out of this movie.
You forgot to mention Commander Jansen, played by the inestimable Cameron Mitchell.
Been too long since we saw Cameron.
I know. He's.
It's a wonderful performance, but it didn't affect a hell of a lot.
Well, no. I mean, he's basically being Commander Adama in this movie.
Yeah, I wrote that down. Commander Adama looks like shit.
Well, I love the fake beard they put on him.
I was just going to say that. Lauren Green grew a fake beard. Yeah.
Oh, man.
So
amazing.
Good. I don't know why they felt like the fake beard was really the way to go, but it added. There's the real thing that you'll always take away from this movie is the fact that every space battle scene is taken from the Battlestar Galactica 1970s TV show. So they shot nothing.
You don't mean that figuratively. Let's be clear to the audience. We don't mean it's sort of copied from it.
It is.
It's literally
exactly that footage.
Yes. I'm pretty sure that they just went up to Glenn Larson and said, "You have any footage you didn't use? We can have."
Yeah, they used that footage.
Used, yeah.
Yeah. They just took all that footage and just formed a story around it. I would love to know where
it's 5 minutes of the movie.
Oh yeah, for sure. But I mean, it sets up so much. It's weird because it sets up the story, but then they really don't care about it for the most part until you get to the pirate battle, which takes no time.
It was obviously planned that way too, because they even use the terminology in the dialogue.
I freaking love that.
They call the spaceships Vipers, and
I love that because the pirates have the Cylon ships, and they call them pirates, and we never actually see them. Like we never see what they look like. We never see anything inside the ships.
Because they wouldn't want to rip off Battlestar. Like if we talk about ripping off, if Battlestar ripped off Star Wars and this ripped off Battlestar, does this still count as a Star Wars? Anyways, come on, what were you saying?
I've forgotten. they have this whole thing of explaining the Cylon ships as the pirates. And then I'm like, well, they must have a fancy name for their own ships. Yeah, they're Vipers.
But early, at the beginning of the film, they called them Stingrays. And then called them Vipers later on.
Nice.
I love how
they committed to the whole feeling of a different universe, though. We get to know our hero, Dave.
I know.
Dave Ryder. But see, you could tell it was updated because it was an R wider, D-E-R instead. That wait, no, that's the 80s. Sorry.
Yeah. Every name was spelled with a Y in the 80s.
Yeah. Yeah, this movie, I love the fact that this movie is the 80s in a nutshell. And for a space movie, that is completely fucking wrong.
I remember looking at the film. They had this dance sequence, and there's more. there's more to get into in this dance sequence that I wasn't going to bring up. Maybe one of you will want to. I'm sure you will.
The dance sequence is one of my favorite parts.
I love that the dance sequence is proving that it's the future in 1980 here by having people wearing parachute pants and using hula hoops.
Yes, the hula hoops, man. That's the greatest thing ever. It's neon green and yellow.
And half the female crew are just in aerobic outfits. Like, they're not even dressed. Like, one of them has an aerobic outfit with, like, shoulder pads.
Yeah.
But there's one woman on the bridge that is just in a full-on aerobic outfit. Like, there's no one. Like, she's just in a leotard.
She just sits there the whole time. Like, there's this great moment where one of the bridge crew gets killed by the mutineers, and then in the next scene I'm like, wait, isn't that bridge crew member that got killed? And I think she appears on the bridge the rest of the time. They just don't talk to her anymore. So yeah, it's good. It's quality filmmaking right here. I love the overall. I love the fact that that everything about this movie screams low budget, but man, God, yes. But man, oh man, Reb Brown, when he delivers that one speech right there before, it's like, we're gonna save the world. Like, yeah, go.
Go out there and kick some ass. And then,
I love his take charge attitude. Is he gets put in charge, and then he's like, okay, we're gonna split into three teams. One team is in charge of making weapons. One team is in charge of using the weapons, and one team is in charge of getting supplies and food. But he doesn't tell anyone who's who. He just lets them figure that part out for themselves.
That's good leadership, man. That's like, you see where you tell people the problem, and then you get them to fix the problem. Yeah,
that's right. That's your, yeah. You empower them,
and then,
like,
and
okay,
then,
pick your own teams. Yeah. I don't know.
And then Reb Brown goes off and it's just like I should come with you to help fix this, help save you. And I'm going to come too. Nope. This feels like something I need to do alone. He's most of the time he has to do things alone, except when he does.
What I found, sorry, go ahead.
You go.
I was just going to say, did anyone else feel that Sissy Cameron's character was supposed to be significantly younger than the actress portraying her?
This is a common misconception, because she is she just looks old. She's not that old. She just looks really, she looks really old.
She's only like 33 or something like that. Wasn't that what I looked up?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
Seemed like she was playing like 18 in there, because she's doing the daddy thing. And
yeah, I mean, the big problem is that Reb Brown is just has such a boyish look. It's his boyish good looks that make him look 10 years younger than her.
Yeah, they're real life husband and wife.
Oh, are they really?
Yeah, they are. They're real life husband and wife, and she's a few years younger than him. I think 4 years younger than him, and looks 14 or 15 years older than him. Nothing you can do about it.
Except her body. That looks perfectly.
Oh, no. She was smoking. I just thought that maybe she was miscast.
There is that moment, I do think, where right off the bat, as you're watching it, that you look at her and she does feel older. But I think for me, by the end of the movie, I had kind of lost that thought, and then you see it. But the costuming is just something else in this movie. I mean, the women wearing their little, you know, one piece bikinis for the
most
part.
Let's get back into the dance sequence and somebody talk about her dance and the camera work.
Oh man, the her dance with the hula hoop, the come on over dance, like, I don't even know. I can't speak to that. It has to be watched.
They just basically took the camera and shoved it right up her ass. I just put it on there for like a minute. And she just bends over and the thong's riding up, and they're just filming it for no reason. And I'm like, wow, this is a little obvious, guys. All the subtlety you could ever imagine.
Well, and the thing is that it's so odd, because there's next to no actual, like, there's no callback to that dance scene again. Like, there's never ever, you could totally lift it out, and I know you wouldn't miss it in the movie. But she does get a chance to use her feminine charms later in one of my favorite scenes, on how is she going to escape from her bonds. Oh, wait, there's a guy. Hey, you, buddy. There's only one guy in the room. Hey, you. What, me? Me? And it's just like, yeah, come on over here. Maybe if you take off your clothes, maybe I'll show you. I'll take off mine. I'm not trying to escape at all. Nope, no, sir.
It was a perfect plan, really.
Oh yeah. I mean, wow, it's the thing that I don't understand about the whole movie is so you got the enforcers. There's apparently 200 of them, I think, because I think he keeps killing the enforcers every time they do something stupid. I would just think by attrition alone, they can't possibly win, because they just like, oh wow, hey, Dave Ryder just made them do something stupid. So all right, that's another five enforcers that are going to get killed. You just keep going like that, and eventually they'll all be dead. Yeah, the whole idea of the putting them on ice and then running into that room with the crazy guy, that the old guy who was falling asleep, offering them tea and stuff like that, as talking about whenever they do something wrong, they get put on ice and frozen. It's a hobby.
Yeah, at one point the bad guy threatens someone and says, "You can join me or go to the deep freeze." And the guy decides he'll commit suicide. It's a weird freaking scene.
he does get helped a little bit.
It was a weird choice to offer, was it not? Wasn't it a secret he was freezing these people?
Well, everything's a secret for about 2 minutes, you know, until our heroes get there, and then suddenly nothing's a secret. Like they're there. I assume the guy who runs the deep freeze, and how this exists and why, like in the middle of the ship, don't know. Can't question those things. But like suddenly this guy is just spilling the beans on everything about Calgon. You know, take me away. But it's like he's just, oh yeah, yeah. So this is what happens. We keep the people here. We freeze them. You know, if it's an enforcer who's done something stupid, then he'll either choose to send him out to blast him out the airlock or just put him on ice. About the same thing, really, if you ask me. But
I also like that there's about 15 minutes of this movie that is people chasing other people in what are essentially golf carts.
Oh man, those are my favorite.
if golf carts could handle way less.
Yeah, they weren't as maneuverable. Yeah. They're probably some kind of go-kart that they've put like a fiberglass shell around, because they rattle all over the place.
Or
like
cardboard.
And let's not forget that not only is it guys chasing each other in those things, they can barely move. And it's just completely a design that nobody would have made in real life. But that's the climactic scene in this movie with all these space battles and whatever. Sure, they're lifted from Battlestar, but these space battles, the climactic scene is two golf carts ramming at each other for 15 minutes.
Until it rams it hard enough that they both explode into a fire, into a ball of fire.
But the thing that I love is that there's this moment where like in the early middle part of the movie where they're like, oh man, the bad guy's getting away on one of these. Oh, we got to chase him. Hurry, get into the other go-kart. Put on your helmet first. Meanwhile, I'm thinking you could have run to catch up with him.
Because I guarantee you
can run faster.
At one point, our female lead does.
Yes.
They're chasing around and she's just running and getting ahead of them.
And she is alternatingly the best shot and the worst shot, because I mean, actually, I don't know how strong those things are. I don't even know what they're used for. They seem to have a place for weapons, but why would you need them on that ship that theoretically everybody's working towards the same goal for the most part? But like, I don't know what they're there for. They don't carry anything other than two people. They don't go fast. They don't. They don't seem to hold cargo in any way, shape, or form. Well, they're heavily armored.
Yeah, they're tech. They say enforcer on the side, so it's some kind of police equipment. I mean, it looks like an old G.I. Joe toy, basically.
Yes, like, yes, it certainly does.
It's got a space in the front for someone to sit and run the thing, and then it's got a little box on the back where you can there's a ladder that you can climb into it, and then that's where you fire from. So I guess this is what it's supposed to be for. But also, you're in a ship. Like, where are you running to?
I mean, it's obviously it's a big ship, but because it has to be a very large ship.
That's a question I had through the whole thing: is how big is the ship?
Well, it's a generational ship. Theoretically, these people have been in there for 10 generations. I mean, don't get me wrong, the writers don't know apparently what that means. but it's a generational ship, so it's got to be big, right? It's got to have everything.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Including a small garden.
Yeah, just a little garden. Yeah, there's no explanation of food in this whole thing. there's a very small garden that's very nice, though.
Well, Well, I mean, they do have sunlight streaming through the windows in just about every scene of the movie.
I'm hoping that Jack has some trivia for this. So,
well, yes, they do. Well, I mean, because it was filmed on a soundstage with windows in Africa, in South Africa. But here's the best part about that is that at one point it was taken out in post production, and then somebody thought, no, they meant to have that in there, so they put it back in. So the sunlight at one point wasn't in there, and somebody misunderstood and put it back in.
Because the whole thing is either like it looks like regular sets when they're on the bridge or during like when she's captured, and then there's huge swaths of this movie that are essentially in some kind of old factory.
Yeah.
There's windows at the top of the factory building that there's no explanation of what that's supposed to be in the context that this is, because it's alternately
like
used
as explanation of why there's keyboards, literally keyboards from normal home computers on the walls,
Commodore 64s everywhere. Yeah.
Well, that's how they did the graphics for the movie. It was a Commodore 64. I mean, it's like space mutiny.
They couldn't afford a Commodore 64 that was working.
I love that the opening credits for this do like they were computer generated, but 1988 computer generated. So it looks like the opening.
It
looks
1988?
Like the credits.
No, I didn't. I thought this was like 1962.
Well, it was released in 88. Who knows when it was filmed?
obviously, the 80s.
Did a good job with trivia, but there's so much.
it's a lot.
because in 1962, I guarantee they didn't have neon hula hoops.
They hadn't perfected that level of hula hoop technology yet.
What I like,
so what you're saying is, if this came out in 88, everybody in it that were complaining about how their clothes are too 80s was actually from 5 years earlier. So even within getting the clothes wrong for the era, they're even more wrong than we imagined.
It's perfect because, I mean, the guys that are on the Enforcers, where you're allowed to have whatever kind of hairstyle you want. Do you want a mullet? Yeah, no problem. Got a mullet. Do you want like long hair that's braided? Yeah, no problem. Have that. Do you want a crazy little mohawk? No problem. You can have that.
I freaking love the guy in the mohawk.
I love the guy. I love the guy that actually had. He was the only guy that had like small football shoulder pads or whatever, and no shirt on. Everybody else had a uniform with that guy.
I thought that was BMX gear, to tell you the truth.
Oh, it probably is. That seems right.
They also had those BMX. Why were some people wearing the masks? The ones that Reb Brown would punch and never hurt his hand.
Never hurt his hand, yeah.
Yeah, he would just punch them, but he only punched them directly in the mask. That was awesome. They were all, it is BMX, it is motocross gear, is what the bad guys' soldiers are wearing. It's motocross masks, and one of the guys is wearing the chest padding. My guess, I did not look at any trivia, my guess is that he fights the same 2 to 4 guys over and over for half the film. Yeah. And that's why they're in masks. Because all the bad guys are wearing these red motocross masks.
There is a point in the movie where he's fighting 5 guys, shoots 2. So 2 are down, and then you come back and there's only 2 guys instead of 3 left. And then he shoots 2 more. And then they say they're all gone. And then they say they're all gone. And then 3 of them walk past them.
Yeah, she says like that's 5 out of like only 5 left out of 6 after he's already shot 2 like 3 of them.
Yeah, it's like
or the bazookas that are never ending bullets or whatever in the bazookas. Those are great.
Yeah, laser bazookas. Man, they love the A-team shot from underneath.
Oh yeah,
an explosion in this movie.
Hey, I love that shot. There's nothing wrong with that shot.
Well, they use it a lot in here. So,
don't badmouth the shot, that's for sure.
It's like, we want it to seem like it's way more explosion than it is. You guys jump and we'll shoot it from underneath.
Yeah, those...
Like, 100 times.
Those stunt guys. And I believe that it was only two guys. Because I like how I believe in the credits. It's like stunt coordinators, name one, name two. Stunts, name two, name one. It's like the same guys.
They flipped a coin for it.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, okay. You can have first billing as a stunt coordinator, but I'm getting first billing on stunts then. Okay? Yeah.
And I would have been like, dude, you fucking take it with this movie. My God. Oh, yes. The fighting in this film. The scene where he does fight, like, in a hallway, fights the two or three guys I can't even explain the awesomeness of it.
Are you talking about the scene that has, like, all the padded shit around?
Yes.
That one of the walls falls down? Yep.
Yeah. Yes. I just can't even.
That is one of those great, great moments of.
There is no words to describe it, because it goes on for, like, way too long, this fight.
Oh, yeah. And then the Leah character comes in, and she winds up getting, like, half-ass captured. She's barely doing anything. Like, her character flips between, like, super awesome and totally, totally 80s damsel in distress quite easily.
Yeah. Yeah.
And don't forget that, of course, Cameron Mitchell just shows up and talks every now and then. That's basically his role, showing up and talking every now and then.
He ever talk.
I love that guy. I love that guy. And he just,
I love the Cameron Mitchell.
He feels, man, he feels like he should have done the same kind of Christopher Plummer style speech from Star Crash at the end of this one too.
Who knows? Maybe they did. Maybe they cut it. I mean, they did cut some stuff. There is an uncut version which has the Lee character, Sissy Cameron, whose name, by the way, this movie starts off awesome because they misspell her name in the opening credits.
Awesome.
Spelling it with a Y instead of IE. But yeah, I mean, she does have a topless scene at one point. So who knows what else is left on the floor? We can only hope that a Cameron Mitchell speech is out there somewhere that we can someday see.
I wish that we'd actually see the sequel since they teased, you know, I mean, biggest explosion ever, like one of the largest explosions I've ever seen in one of these movies. And meanwhile, the guy, like, you know, kind of gets away from it, and he's sitting off to the side.
Yeah,
not the
main bad guy, but the second main bad guy, McPherson.
Really? That I thought that was Calgon.
I thought that was McPherson.
No, I'm pretty sure it was Calgon. It was Calgon, yeah.
Are you sure?
Yeah,
it was Calgon, yeah.
They do look kind of similar.
But yeah, like, and he looks, you know, a little the worse for wear, but not like he was just in the biggest explosion ever. I guess we never will get a sequel to this.
Well, it's still.
Oh, no.
Maybe I could make the sequel.
Well, you'd have the same amount of money. What do you got in your credit card? $150?
Yeah. I don't need more. Like, all I need is Reb Brown. That's all.
And you can steal footage from a different Battlestar Galactica.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's right. There's an updated Battlestar Galactica. Unfortunately, I can't get Cameron Mitchell. But that's okay, because I'm sure that the technology exists now to recreate Cameron Mitchell in, like, a hologram fashion.
Yeah.
I can see it. This is going to be great.
Or you can get Christopher Plummer.
Yeah. Yeah, but then I'd have to go to Rome. Then I could get Christopher Plummer, guaranteed.
You're shooting a portal.
Yeah.
I hope everyone listens to both episodes.
Otherwise, that would make no sense.
I get the feeling, though, that there's going to be a lot of crossing over back and forth between every movie in this season of Space.
I got to keep really careful notes, or I'll start talking about different ones. Like, yeah. I was partway through something in the last episode where I'm like, that is this movie, right?
I know. All right, let's go ahead. I was going to say scoring time otherwise, but go ahead.
I just want to. No, I'll leave it for the scoring. I'll leave it for the scoring. Because I think it's we've used the motocross thing, which was going to be my WTF. So I got something else I could bring. For that. All right.
You can find something?
What?
I gotta reach for this. Okay. In our search for the ultimate B-movie, we rate each film in five categories, none of which are objective quality. The first category is called schlock appeal, and we start with Stan.
This movie is perhaps the schlockiest movie I've ever seen. I you know, the fact that they have Battlestar Galactica footage, the fact that you've got Reb Brown and Cameron Mitchell, who are just, you know, heroes of the schlock genre to me, it's wonderful. It's terrible. The storyline makes no sense. It has 80s graphics. So I'm going to give it a 9.
It doesn't get schlockier than this 9.
Wow.
Fine, 10. I've been trying not to give 10s, but 10.
We rate each one out of from 0 to 9.
That's right. And it doesn't get a 0, so it's obviously in.
I get what you're saying. There is a lot of schlock here, but I don't think it's quality schlock. They don't milk it for all it's worth. Yeah, I'm only going to go as high as a 7 on that, on schlock appeal.
Yeah, here's the thing. I was really bored watching this movie.
Yeah, I mean, this movie
really
has
was super
a
bored.
Disco dance with a hula hoop space shit going on. And I spent a lot of time yawning and looking for if somebody left a window open.
Yeah, like, seriously, it's one of those things where I'm watching this going, like it should have everything I am looking for. But sometimes you just get those movies where, you know, like, there's some movies, like, you could watch it by yourself, or you can watch it with 10 people, or you can watch it with 1,000, and it's going to be great. Like, and like, at Frankenstein Island, the schlock is so strong that you're laughing regardless if it's you. And this is one where I think if I watched it with you guys in person, I would have loved it, because we would have been ripping on it the whole time. But by itself, you're just watching it going, man, it's kind of, it didn't hit for me the way I hoped it would. So I can't give it nearly as high. I'm only going 5.
Well, I definitely thought the schlock was present. I will cop to having been quite bored at times. I paused it to play Scrabble on my phone. I think I watched an episode of something in the middle of it. I probably shouldn't have watched two Boogaloo films in one day. Like, I think caution to the listeners: you can get over Boogalooed.
You can be over Boogaloo for
yeah.
sure.
Yeah, I'm still going high on this. I'm going with a 9. Our next category we call more heart than budget.
Well, there is absolutely no budget to this movie, none whatsoever.
But is there heart?
Well, I mean, that's the thing, right? For me, this feels like completely serious. You've got, man, Reb Brown, he was bringing it all the time. Like, everything just felt so earnest and serious to me. So I've got to give it a 7.
I think we were watching a different film. I don't think anyone was really invested in this thing. I'll go as high as a 5 because, well, the thing got made. But with this kind of production value, you thought some people would just walk away. They didn't. 5.
Well, the director did.
Okay.
Well, no, but it was a death in the family. So right before production, he literally
did
went
he kill.
It's possible that he did. You know,
I to apologize to listeners. It is too soon to make that kind of joke.
Soon, yeah, but he did go. Yeah, you're responsible for this, and you're responsible for this, and then he left. So I don't know how well that worked out. Not so well, I guess. Look, they were optimistic. They left it open for a sequel. they were optimistic, and they had no money, but they had a lot of explosions and a lot of lasers. They didn't have as many special effects as when they couldn't find special effects, they found a way to steal special effects. I'm giving this an 8.
I'm more in line with Jack here. Not only did they bring in a space battle for the cost of stock footage, they periodically reuse footage from the same film.
Yeah.
People enter, like people just walking down hallways and re-entering, they use that footage over again. They used every part of the Buffalo in this. I'm giving this a 10 out of 10. I think they did a magnificent job. And because they left, leaving a cliffhanger for a sequel is the ballsiest thing I have seen in a one
of our. You're so optimistic.
We got to leave the. I mean, imagine getting to the end. You're doing the edit, and you're like, "We need to leave an opportunity for a sequel on this. Don't paint yourself into a corner. There'll be a space mutiny too." All right, our next category we're calling "What the Fuck Moments."
Oh man, what the fuck moments. There's
I think that exact same sentence after Jim says that this is what we're doing is what you say almost every episode.
I know.
That same sigh. Like, how do I schedule enough time in my day to get them all?
There's so many. I mean, and I know we've talked about a lot of them, but and it's not the first one, but it's that moment that AJ's dance scene is just so out of nowhere. It's like the perfect what the fuck moment to me, because it's just so completely 80s right in the middle. But I mean, the 80s is all over this. I mean, in the hairdos, in that, in the graphics, in the like people jumping off of the towers because of the explosions, everything just screams 80s television, which is great. but I love the fact that the ship is so odd. It's just one of those cases where, like, Calgon, I don't understand what Calgon does, and that's great. And when they strip him of his rank, and it doesn't matter because he's already got 200 enforcers. Like, the movie by itself is a what the fuck moment. It just
That's probably accurate. My what the fuck moment is everything from the beginning of the film to the end of the film.
Yeah, now that I think about it, it's like it starts out as Battlestar Galactica and it moves into something else. And there's no point where I'm just like, oh, that makes perfect sense, because nothing makes sense in this movie.
You'll never use the sentence "that makes perfect sense." That is true.
No.
You'll never use that sentence in this movie.
And I'm going to give this one a 10. 10. Yeah.
Fuck, oh, you, wow. Are you sure you don't want to give it a top score of 9?
Yeah. Fuck you guys. I'm going to give this one on a ranking of 0 to 9. I'm going to give it a 10.
I don't think any of the what the fuck in this movie enhances the movie in any way. At no point did I go, yeah, I like what they did there. That made me laugh.
Oh, I was laughing at the end when they're doing that battle in the, you know, and the two little go-karts are zipping and they're bumper cars. I was laughing outright right there.
No, so just for the quality once again, I have to cut it down to like a 7. I mean, there's a lot of WTF in here. There's the dance sequence. There's the beard. I love that beard, but
the beard is extra special.
Yes. But yeah, I can't go any higher.
Yeah, the only one in the whole film that had me go, "What the hell?" And I laughed and almost stood up. I believe I actually stood up. Was the moment where there's a character in this, and she's member of the bridge crew, and she seems like she's going to be a pretty important character. And then you have your bad guy. What was his name again?
Calgon.
Okay. So Calgon discovers that one of the guys that he thought he could trust is in fact going to rat him out. So he calls up this girl in the bridge crew, and this girl in the bridge crew, she goes, he gives her the message that this guy who's ratting her out, Calgon. And so she shows up to confront Calgon or something like that, or shows up, she gets shot. Okay. And the next scene, they walk past her on the bridge in her position. That to me was the single most, what the hell am I watching moment, maybe in film history. She's shot, she's dead. They look at her body, they talk about how she's dead, and then they literally walk past her in the next scene, and nobody went, hey, that might be a continuity error.
They walk past her in every scene beyond that.
It was her twin sister.
Well, no, she was only in that one scene, I think, after that. Though there is a scene early on where you can see the characters fighting from a scene from later in the movie on the monitor. There's a monitor and the characters are fighting, and then and it's a fight scene that happens later in the film. So what? So yeah, there's some pretty incredible moments to this. I do think I have to give it, but again, I'll also agree though with Nick that they aren't necessarily entertaining because I was bored despite the WTF. So I'm really stuck between a 6.5.
All right, and we'll round that to 7.
You're breaking the octagon. No breaking the octagon.
All right, 7.
Well, we are into the 5th season. We're almost at 50 movies we've covered, and one of the challenges that I have is that I have to go last when we're doing WTF moments, and I always just check off my list of, oh yeah, we talked about that. And this time out, I want to thank you all for not mentioning like two gigantic ones, and I get to talk about them. One is we are on the Southern Sun is the name of the ship. It seems like it's only called the Southern Sun because they had a huge pile of leftover Nazi uniforms with an SS symbol on the chest. The SS lightning bolts on the breast of all of the good guys and the bad guys wear uniforms with lightning bolt SS on them.
I didn't notice that.
Who thought that was a good idea? At first, I thought it was just the bad guy, and I'm like, oh, the bad guy's wearing an SS uniform. That's a little on the nose. And then I realized everyone's wearing them. I can only assume they're left over from, like, Nazis in space. The other one is that early on in the film, they bring a ship on board that is full of aliens. All of the aliens are super hot women.
How did we never talk about the aliens?
I don't know how.
Led by Courtney Love.
Is it actually Courtney Love, or is it just?
No, it just looks. This looks a hell of a lot like her.
It does. Balerion is that? Are those? They're the Balerians because they're out and they're all dressed in ballerina outfits. They're all dressed in modern dancer ballerina outfits, and they have very vaguely defined powers. They're some kind of oracles, or one of the leader of them is an oracle. Like at one point, Cameron Mitchell goes for advice from them, but she gives her seeing or whatever she's doing by dancing in a modern, like a black modern dance outfit and rubbing up against plasma globes. This like big pile of Spencer Gifts plasma globes.
Yeah,
that she's seductively rolling against.
You're like banned from talking to them, and yet everybody goes and tries to talk to them. But most of the time, they just say, "Hey, we don't want to talk to you."
Well, they call people in. They keep calling people to them.
Yeah, they're supposed to be off limits, and people keep dropping by. Want to talk to anyone.
That part is like, what if Babylon 5 was the worst television show ever? Because they felt like they totally belonged in Babylon 5.
They belonged in the first season of Babylon
5. Yeah, yeah.
The thing is that you keep on expecting them to have an important role, and then they don't.
Nope. It's funny when no one else mentioned them. I'm like, I didn't watch a long had them, because you could just lift them right out and it would affect nothing in the story.
I almost brought them up when we were talking about the bulk of the movie. I almost went, what about those girls? I figured that would have been enough for you guys to figure it out, but there was a lot of things to talk about.
There's just a lot to cover. I had forgotten the dance scene, so that's, I'm giving this a 9. This is just, I didn't know what the hell was happening for half of this movie. All right. Our next category we call memorable moments.
Well, to me, it's interesting because I've seen this movie before, and I actually wound up remembering a fair chunk of it. The Battlestar Galactica stuff, that was, like, when we started discussing doing this series, or this season, I was just like, the thing that got me was I was just thinking, I gotta watch Space Mutiny again. I gotta be able to see the Battlestar Galactica scenes. I gotta see the wall falling down. I gotta see Reb Brown. I gotta see the go-karts. I gotta see all this stuff. So to me, so much of this movie is very memorable. And I love the every viewing experience of it. So I'm gonna go pretty high. I'm gonna go a 7.
You're on something. I don't know what it is. I'm giving this one a 5 for, I'm going to remember parts of this movie, but I'm going to remember them as parts of other movies.
Fair.
On a whole, nothing in this movie holds together. So yeah, I'm going to remember some sort of weird dance sequence, but you know, when I want to see it again, I'm going to be searching through Star Crash or any one of 100 different films. So yeah, I'll give it a 5 for memorability, but that's as far as I'm willing to go.
Yeah. And I won't even go that high. There is to me one memorable moment where it was just awesome. And it's, we talked about the speech that Reb Brown, and you know, once he got off the set of being the body double for Dolph Lundgren, shows up here. And
what movie was he a body double for?
I assume all of them. I thought I was serious. It was a joke.
Yeah, I totally thought you were serious on that. It made perfect sense. Yeah, yeah. As you're doing it, I'm like, yeah, that makes sense.
So once he shows up and he gives that speech and he's like, we're going to, and you're going to do this and we're going to do this. Let's go kick some ass. The villain character, like the one who's on the inside, who betrays the Adama character, McPherson. So he's on the inside. And so he's sitting there and he's watching this speech and Reb Brown's like, and we're going to go out there and we're going to hit him to the left. We're going to hit him to the right. We're going to hit him up and down. Fight, fight, fight. Let's go kick some ass. And he just looks at him and goes, asshole.
I love that. That's so great.
That has got to be one of the greatest moments in the history of movies. This movie is surprisingly foul-mouthed, by the way.
Yeah.
Reb Brown especially, just it goes on a torrent of profanity near the end of this movie.
The golf cart. Yeah.
Shit, fuck yes. Just totally all over that.
Oh man, yeah. So I loved it when he said asshole, but honestly, I don't think this is a very memorable movie. I got a 4.
I'm more in the, I almost feel like we should wait a year and come back and redo memorable moments.
Oh, absolutely.
Every movie.
Yes.
So you have to like,
well, we do our awards.
It's retroactively alter the scores though for how memorable it is. I'm also gonna go with a 4 on this one. I don't think a lot of this is gonna stick in my head other than I do enjoy it more than Galactica 1980 as far as reusing Battlestar. So of all the places they've used Battlestar Galactica scenes, I'm gonna put it above Galactica 80.
It also has a better fake beard than
yeah.
Battlestar 1980.
Totally forgot that one.
Reb Brown. I mean, why wasn't Reb Brown in that? That's, I mean, clearly missed opportunity.
Well, that's my question for everything. Why isn't Reb Brown in it?
Is he still getting work? Is he still around?
I don't know, but we need to get him on the show.
All right, our
he
final
has a future, I will say this confidently. He is a future member of the Saints of Boogaloo.
Yes, yes. Guaranteed. Guaranteed.
You will be in the Hall of Fame someday.
All right, our final category we call Crazy Concept.
Oh, boy. I don't know. I really have no idea how to score this one, in fairness, because I don't think that the concept by itself is that crazy, but the execution is completely balls nutty. So ultimately, I'm probably just going to give this one a 4.
You know what? I'm going high on this. I'll give it a 6. Just on the basis of somebody had to stand in the meeting room and go, here's what we do. We steal everything.
And when they said everything, you mean concepts? And they said, no, actual footage.
Exactly. Like, obviously, it was the plan from the start to steal the Battlestar Galactica footage. There is no real story to speak of, so they can't even claim like that. They just sort of said, we want to make a space movie and we'll steal some stuff. I think we can get Red Brown.
And Cameron Mitchell.
If we also hire his wife.
So yeah, yeah, and they all said, hey, box office.
Yeah. So 6. Like yeah.
No, I think honestly, I agree. It's like literally, hey, I think this thing's pretty damn crazy. I think the idea that you're like, let's build a film around this footage we can steal from a show that wasn't that popular and has a cult following is a crazy concept. I got a 7.
All right. Well, I think I was generous in the other categories. So this one, I came in a little lower. I think it's definitely an odd pitch to wrap something around footage that, I mean, it only lasted a season, but it did get a revival and a theatrical release. So I feel like a lot of people would have seen that footage. I'm going to go with a 6, though. All right, which brings us to our secret modifiers. Every season we have 6 secret modifiers. This movie has none of them.
I love it when they're completely irrelevant. Like, why the hell do we bother?
Well, because last time we one
you guys
was...
don't know you guys don't know the hours that are spent. This is the hardest yeah. part of putting this thing together. Naming the season is difficult and everything like that, but good Lord, coming up with these modifiers is a pain in the ass.
And we always go one way or the other where we have like 18 pluses, but we can't think of a minus or vice versa. All right, which brings us to a final total of 68.5 out of 100, which puts it probably in the top 20 of what we've done so far. Pretty respectable score.
Yeah, respectable. That's very close to Gymkhana, isn't it?
It would be, what did I say? So I said 68.5, and 68.5 would be right on Santa's sleigh, a point ahead of Gymkhana. Yeah.
That's about where I'd say this fits. Sure. Sure. But we're going to have, you know, I think one thing that we can look forward to in the next film is some diversity from Star Crash and Space Mutiny. I think there was perhaps too much commonality. And I think that we can look to some of the upcoming episodes, hopefully having a little bit more uniqueness.
I didn't feel like there was that much, but that's okay. Well, I mean, our next episode is Planet of the Vampires. So, I mean, there's no question. When you think about Star Crash, Space Mutiny, even just the titles, I know nothing about Planet of the Vampires. But, hey, Planet of the Vampires sounds great to me. So I am looking forward to it.
And who picked Space Mutiny?
That was me.
And who picked Star Crash?
That was me.
Okay, and then what are the next two movies?
Planet of the Vampires and Space Rage are the next two.
And who picked those?
I believe these are my two.
Okay, and then after that, Nick's two, and then my two.
Yes, we put them together. Very, we did a great
usually
job.
Usually, we totally
up.
Mix them up so that yeah. it's not So that'll be interesting. That'll be a new thing this season, along with our new theme songs. We have that.
That's right. This is a great season. It's full of spacey goodness. All right. Jim, tell the folks where they can find us.
All right. We are on Instagram at Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo and use that hashtag when talking about the B-movies you love. For the internet, go to wetalkpodcast.com, and that is also the home of the Octagon, where you can see the ongoing scoring. And We Talk Podcasts on Twitter and Facebook, and they will keep you up to date as new episodes and seasons come out.
All right. Well, I am super glad that I forced you to watch Space Mutiny, because I really enjoyed watching it again, so screw you all. See, this is the reason.
And you certainly did.
Yes, we enjoy the show for watching all these crappy movies. But they are great, great movies for us. I do get that question from my wife all the time. How can you watch this? But that's okay, because I enjoy it. And speaking of enjoy it, I also enjoy when I get to move on to the next movie. And that's exactly what I'm going to do. I'm going to leave the show and I'm going to go watch Planet of the Vampires, because that sounds like fun right now to me. All right. So unless anybody else has anything else to add, then I think we should move on. So for Nick, for Jack, and for Jim, I am your host, 8th Dan Stanadu, and thanks for watching Astro Nuts of the Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo!
You've seen Star Wars. You've seen Star Trek. Now, the ultimate star adventure, Space Mutiny. Journey with space colonists who are trapped on a never-ending voyage of terror, death, and destruction.
It's a cruel fate to be born in space.
What are all these bodies for?
When anyone is under suspicion, they're immediately arrested, tortured, and given the truth. However, if they seem redeemable, Culloden freezes them.
Vicious pirate ships bombard the helpless crew of the starship Southern Sun, while fanatical mutineers seize control from within.
Hyper out of control. Collision imminent.
And there is only one man who can save them. Starring Reb Brown.
I did what I had to do. Don't you think I realized a good man died?
John Philip Law.
Ryder must be eliminated at once.
James Ryan.
Are there any other of you that wish to confuse freedom with treason?
Cameron Mitchell.
It is now time.
And introducing Sissy Cameron.
I have something to show you.
Oh no. He's evil, ruthless.
Find my way, idiot!
We have to fight back. There is only one man on the ship who's capable of combat.
What a shame to burn out these lovely teeth. I do have one weakness. Pain. Other people's.
What took you so long?
Where's that idiot who let her escape? You've got him on ice, sir. Kill him at once.
Yes, sir.
Reb Brown romances the commander's daughter while holding off sadistic terrorists.
Terminate with extreme prejudice.
Be mesmerized by mysterious alien women.
One cannot escape one's own destiny.
We're going to hold out here and never let them take over the Southern Sun.
Join the crew of the Southern Sun as they fight for their lives.
Take this, you space bitch.
No!
Space Mutiny. In space, there is no way out.